Our guest speaker this morning is Ms. Natalie Costa, who will be speaking about a very effective form of advocacy that she developed in the process of dealing with a personal tragedy. To handle a prescription drug abuse problem that came too close to home, she developed a film documentary as an advocacy outreach. Natalie is a passionate social activist through her documentary, Behind the Orange Curtain, a film about the little-known problem of prescription drug abuse, even in upscale neighborhoods. Ms. Costa is also devoted to running the Performers Academy in Laguna Woods. Please join me in welcoming Natalie Costa.
Well, thank you so much, and good morning, and thank you for having me. As you said that I'm a documentary filmmaker, that is true, but it came, I'd like to say, complete by accident, but not so much so. In May of 2010, my daughter called me from Dana Hills High School screaming that her friend Mark Melkonian had passed away. And Mark was a very handsome, very dynamic, very loving kid with not an enemy in the world. I mean, he'd walk into a room and lit up the room. And what it came to find out that Mark had passed away from an overdose of a drug called Opana, which is one of the strongest opiates they usually give to end-stage cancer patients. And because of Mark's death, I had the privilege and the honor of taking my daughter, who was then 17 years old, to her first funeral. And it was a tiny little church in South Orange County, a little Armenian church that could hold 1,000 people, and about 3,000 showed up. And at the end of the sermon, they wheeled Mark's casket into a tiny little lobby and opened it up, which caused the most, till today, it's very hard to describe what had happened, because the casket is opened up and now all of these people are just really wailing from the pain of losing their friend. And as I was standing in the back of that church, I was crammed against the wall and holding up a football player in front of me that was moving back and forth through his sorrow. And I knew at that moment something hit me in the back of the head and said, "You have to do something about this." And that was one of the most defining moments in my life. I had no idea what it was going to be, that it was going to be a documentary, but I knew the death of this young man and how it affected all of these kids and my own daughter and myself. Something had to be done, and that was the uncovering of the fact that we have an epidemic in South Orange County of a prescription drug problem. It was a shock because it's Orange County, because here we have moved here from various places, I from New Jersey, to give our kids a good life, a good education, great churches, sporting events, things of that sort, to give them a leg up on life. And why are our children suffering from addiction and deadly prescription drugs? But I found out that it wasn't any different than any other city in the country, that this was a national epidemic. Because I own a performing arts school in South Orange County, all of my teachers are film directors, and it was one night I made a phone call to Brent Huff, who works for me and is also a film director, and I said, "There's a story to tell here in Orange County. Do you want to help me tell it?" And he said, "Yes." I had no idea where we were going from then, and at that moment I opened my mouth and I said, "I'll plop in this amount of money," which shocked me the next day. But that was the seed money to get it started. It wasn't that much money. It was $10,000. To me, it was a fortune. It still is a fortune, but it got the ball rolling. And then from there, I went to Kickstarter, which is a crowdfunding. They have Kickstarter, Indiegogo, and we put up a video saying, "This is the movie we want to make." And before you know it, we started getting donations in there, and it was probably the most sleepless month of my life, because I cut and pasted our little cry for help to help fund this movie, and we funded it within 30 days. And the movie has gone on, and I like to say it's taken a toll, its own road. It is now in many countries around the world. It has been translated into Portuguese. It's in South America. It's moving now into Belgium and to Australia. But the point of all of this is that social media these days and the ability to get online and to do things on Facebook or YouTube has really opened up the world for things that people are passionate about. I was very passionate always about the pharmaceutical companies' effect on us as individuals. I still don't believe we should sit at home and watch TV commercials of pharmaceutical drugs that are a minute long when we have no idea how to get them or why we need them, but yet our brains are pummeled with this need for medication. So I've always had that issue, and I was always outspoken, but I always felt that being silent once you know something doesn't do you any good. If you know something, I think we all have an obligation to go out and speak about it or get passionate about it, and not everyone has to make a documentary. You can help fund documentaries that are being made on something you're very passionate about. You can make your own little movies for YouTube on things that you're passionate about or things that irritate you. There's petitions that circle the internet these days on all kinds of subjects, from animal rights to children's rights to just being irritated with our politicians. But our voices can be heard easier today than they ever could before. And I think that that I knew that I had an obligation once I knew and once I felt that message that something had to be done. I couldn't stop until it was done. And there isn't a day that goes by that I'm not surprised, or I'm still surprised, by the effect that the film has had. From little emails of dad saying, "We saw this last night with my son on the way home. He said, 'Dad, I have something to tell you. I've been messing around with prescription drugs, and I have a problem.'" So it, every day we hear things about children and young people in America being called through addiction and the devastation that it's causing on families. And yet, what do we do about it? And we can only speak up. And part of the problem of addiction is the stigma of shame. So all of the advocacy that I'm doing and parents are doing that have addicted children or have lost their children is opening up a whole other line of communication about what addiction is, who it affects. It affects pretty much every family that I've ever run across in the last 2 years. We also have statistics that every 19 minutes we lose life in this country to a prescription drug overdose. So taking away the stigma for parents to be able to come out and say, "I need help, I have a child," or "I am addicted," is really making a change in this world. Because of the documentary, certain things have, I get emails all the time, and now it's taking another direction where I will be making another documentary, and it is about the children of addicts. And what we're finding out is that 2.5 million grandparents in this country are raising their children's children because of the problem of addiction. So what we're finding is that judges are not sympathetic. Many times they give custody back to the parent, which is not in a full or good place of recovery. And so the children are being taken away from grandparents and giving back to an addicted child. So their voices need to be heard. And because of the associations that I've met through the film and through the contacts that I have, we're going to be pursuing that in the next several weeks. So we're starting the groundwork for that. But it's one of those things that once you know, and that's always been my thing in life, is once you know something and it really bothers you or it really touches your heart, you can't be quiet about it. But in this day and age, it is a lot easier to get information out there, a lot easier to get information and to find out, you know, through subtle emails or through phone calls or somebody telling you in a shopping mall when they see your t-shirt, "I saw your movie and this happened or that happened," or "My sister got help," or "My brother got help." So it's a trickling effect, but it's working and it's available to everybody. So you don't have to put up a lot of money to make your voice heard. But documentaries these days, with the help of Indiegogo and crowdfunding resources, where people can raise money easily to have messages out there, is making a big change in a lot of social issues. And I'm very grateful for that.
I just want to ask, where can we see this?
The documentary, you can watch it for free on Hulu, and you just go to Hulu.com and you type in "Behind the Orange Curtain" and you can watch it for free. That version is 87 minutes long and it has commercials in it. That's why it's free. You can also download it on iTunes or Amazon Instant Viewing. And for those that may be interested in screenings in their area and in, you know, schools, we have a 50-minute version that we take, which is cut it down substantially, still allows for Q&A sessions.
I came to your screen that you had here, which was very good. I'd like you to maybe talk a little bit about the documentary and some of the things in it. And I remember there was involvement of the police department and other things. I thought it'd be nice if you expanded.
Okay. The documentary Behind the Orange Curtain is highlights several families here in Orange County that have lost their children to addiction. the shock from these parents was that their children were actually messing around with prescription drugs, and they found out quite accidentally that their child was in trouble. Vernon Porter is a worship pastor. His daughter did have issues with drugs and was in recovery and in sober living, and she went to a party one night, and someone, they had drugs there, and they crushed this drug called Opana, and she snorted it thinking it's cocaine. She passed out, and they put her in a bedroom, shut the door, turned off her cell phone, and left her there for 13 hours until the next morning they called for help. The documentary behind Orange Curtain helped get a law passed in the state of California called the 911 Good Samaritan Law. So it's important that young people know that if they're at a party or they're in a situation where someone is overdosing, even from alcohol poisoning, they can pick up the phone and call 911, and first responders will come, transport the person, and look the other way, so they don't have to fear arrest or prosecution. James Kennedy's son also had issues with drugs, and he was in Orange with some friends and started overdosing, and they drove him back to San Juan Capistrano and dumped him on the side of the road and called 911. But because the first responders kept saying, are you at the Jack in the Box, they kept hanging up, and the first responder made a decision not to send anybody out on a wild goose chase. So the next morning in the film, you'll hear the 911 call saying, I'm driving to work and there's someone laying face down in the gravel. That was James's son. So a lot of the things that happened, the parents came forward and told their stories, and they're all, you know, parents who have done the right things for their children, and that was the shock of behind the Orange Curtain, here where we're supposed to live this idyllic lifestyle, or at least attempt to. How are these people losing their children? What did they do wrong? And the reality of it is they didn't do anything wrong. These kids are experimenting. I think since the beginning of time, we tried to alter our mind in some, you know, some way. Religions use alcohol to celebrate, you know, the holidays, and the kids are doing what we probably did in the 70s, smoke weed and drink beer and whatever, but someone comes along and ups it a level, and it's a prescription drug, and they're not aware of how highly addictive these drugs are. And if you mess with an opiate, Vicodin, Xanax, Oxycontin, they're synthetic heroin. So if you mess with these drugs, it lowers your respiratory system. If you have alcohol in there, you lay down, you fall asleep, you don't wake up. And that's what happened to Mark Melkonian, my daughter's friend, the reason I made the film. He went to sleep like this at night and never woke up. So that's, it's an awareness call and a call to action. And several things have come out of it. The DEA's take back program, where you could dispose of your unused drugs in your home. They do that twice a year. And Fullerton has in the police station a drop box where you can do that. And the other thing that's coming to light from it is the CURE system, which is a prescription drug monitoring program. When a doctor writes a prescription and it goes to the pharmacy, it's tracked. So they'll see all the prescriptions that Dr. Smith is writing. On the other side of that, it'll show doctor shoppers, which are addicts that go from doctor to doctor to doctor and pay cash for prescriptions. And that helps the DEA track down the dirty doctors, as they're called, or the doctor shopping addicts that are using multiple doctors to get their drugs.
Hi. If you were to encounter someone who does have a prescription problem, what resources or agencies are there to help these people?
If you were to know someone with a prescription drug problem, that's a tough one, because addicts don't really want help until they hit bottom. But if you know where they're getting the prescription medications from, if they're getting from the home, you need to cut off that flow, that supply and demand chain there. Absolutely have heart-to-heart talk with them and say, you know, that there's a problem and that there's help available. There's lots of help available if you can, on many cases, afford it, but there's a lot of free help out there. And it's very difficult to talk to an addict. It really is. We've tried over and over with hundreds of cases, and it isn't until they hit that proverbial bottom that they want help. But they have to understand that messing with prescription drugs, you either get clean or you die, or you move to heroin because they can't afford the prescription drugs any longer. That's why we have a boost in heroin consumption. In Orange County, you can get a balloon of heroin for $6. An OxyContin is $1 a milligram. So if you have an Oxy 40, it's going to cost the addict $40, or they can get the same high from $6 from heroin. So that's what's happening. But that's a really tough one. You need to get family, everybody around, and let them know that we understand what you're doing, we know what you're doing, it's not accepted, and help is, you know, you need to get help and pray for the best.
Thank you.
I think we all understand that the reason the drug companies are aggressively marketing all these narcotics and looking for a customer base is because this is a hugely profitable business. And in fact, the big drug outfits are the best earners on the stock market. So, and of course, here in Orange County, particularly in South Orange County, there's a lot of people who think that any attempt to regulate the market is some kind of socialism. So, how much pushback are you getting from the big money?
Well, my husband said that we should probably get me a flak jacket and some security cameras on the house. But the good thing is that I really don't work for anybody, so no one can really stifle me. I've gotten complaints from, you know, people saying that, you know, medications, you don't really know on Facebook who's a real friend or who's you know, a cover for somebody. But, you know, they'll argue about medications. Medications are really important for those that need it. I have my thyroid out. I can't live without Synthroid. But for situations... In the U.S., in 2010, 227 million prescriptions were written for opiates. And the statistics are that's enough to medicate every man and woman in this country around the clock for 30 days. So how much pain are we in? When you figure that OxyContin is made by Purdue Pharmaceuticals and they make $3 billion with a B dollars off of that one pill alone, it's profits over people. That's the way I'm looking at it. There's other alternatives to pain, but the quick and easy fix, we as consumers go to a doctor and want to leave with a prescription. We want the quick fix to feel better, and they're obliged to give it to you. And the pushback now is starting to come from parents bombarding the pharmaceutical industry with ban OxyContin and ban this and ban that. I don't think you should ban it. I think it is necessary on some levels, but not on the level that they're doing. I think if you're making $3 billion on a pill and you helped create this epidemic and this disease and this destruction that's affecting mostly our 18 to 25-year-old individuals, then you should pay to help fix them on some level and make readily available rehabs that work. Because right now, rehab in this country is $1,000 a day, 30-day minimum stay, and the only guarantee is you're going to relapse. So in my film, one young girl went to 16 rehabs at the cost of $30,000 to $40,000 a stint, and she's clean for 3 years. She was clean when we filmed her. She's no longer clean. She's back on the stuff, and her mother last saw her in December. So it's a lifetime of, you know, it's really a hard road to get out of once they get in it, and prevention is really the key.
So for the minors that are taking these prescription drugs, are they going through the parents and then through the doctor? How do they get those?
Many times they find them in the parents' medicine cabinet. I don't think any parent here has enough medication to fuel the addiction, so they'll start off with your OxyContin, your Vicodin, your Xanax. There's lots of moms in Orange County I know taking Xanax because of the stress that they're feeling of running a household and children. Xanax is very available. Anytime you go to the doctor and you got, oh, I'm stressed out, here's a prescription for Xanax. But what's happening in Orange County right today, there's 30 doctors on the watch list of the DEA that are considered dirty doctors that prescribe for cash. Now, Alvin Yee, if you go to 2020.com, you know, the TV show, and you search Alvin Yee, you'll see the interview on him and his wife. He's a doctor from Mission Viejo that sat in Starbucks every night, and lines of young men and women would come in. They have the undercover footage of him in his white shirt, his stethoscope, his computer, and he would ask them questions. So what are you doing? Are you anxious? Are you this or that? They would hand him $600 cash, sometimes put it in an empty Starbucks cup or an envelope, slip it under the table. He would write them prescriptions, and out the door they would go. And he was arrested, prosecuted, and convicted. The DA asked for 10 years. The judge gave him 11. And his wife, when they raided his house, the DEA agent that was here that night told me that the door was locked in the bedroom, and when they tried to kick it in, the wife said, please don't, she's a lawyer, please don't kick the door in. It was her fifth marriage, and when she married Dr. Yee 2 months before she married him, her own son died of a prescription drug overdose. And here she is, married to this man that's sitting there selling to children. He also sold at a car dealership in Mission Viejo and in a Las Vegas casino, sold prescriptions for gambling money. So dirty doctors are the key source of how these kids are getting these drugs. So that's why that Cures tracking system is really important, because when people are filling OxyContin prescriptions, Vicodin, Opana, they need to figure out who's writing them and who's getting them. And it costs a doctor $6 a year to belong to Cures.
Hello, Nancy.
Hello.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I don't know where to begin. I'm going to say the same thing I said when we saw a movie here a couple of months ago, and the first time I saw it back in December at a different location. Everybody who has a child, grandchild, neighbor, between ages of 10 and 18, must see this with the child. It will open conversation between adults and parents, adults and children. Adults cannot sit back and watch this and get outraged, okay? Because we have to prevent this. Fixing things, and we did have this conversation here, fixing things is a good thing to do, but we have to look at our children and see why are they attracted to it. And this is all emotional. Children don't talk about their being sad or being upset, and this is what drives us. I'd like to suggest something else. I have a movie at home. It calls Side Effect. It's a fictional story with a Katherine Hagel as an executive producer, and she plays this. But it's based on a story of a director, I can't remember the name of the woman, who actually was a representative for a drug company for 10 years. And this is her kind of a, you know, notes, okay? There is a 90,000 sales representative roaming around our country, pushing drugs on us, okay? None of them have a medical background. None of them know enough about anything. And I'd like you to watch this movie, rent it somewhere. It's not to compare, not to mm-hmm. you know, interfere. But it's called Side Effect. And it's really interesting to see. And there is a lot of information. There are lots of statistics there about cost to us and how much they make money and things like that. So we all have to look in our medical copy cabinets and see what we're doing to ourselves and providing others with it. Thank you.
Thanks for caring enough to make the movie.
Thank you.
You mentioned there's another movie in the works. What's that about?
The other documentary is about the children of addicts. And it is, the working title right now is Angels of Addicts, because so many young men and women that are addicted have children, lots of them. And there's a Facebook page called The Addict's Mom. And in a mom wrote about her son's addiction, and within a matter of time, she has 20,000 members of mothers who are telling their stories every day. And there, some of them are, you know, I'm 58. I can't imagine getting two and three children to raise again from ground up because my child is running wild with drugs. And what the legal system is not understanding is that when you remand a child back to a parent, especially an addict parent, they need to be in some level of recovery before you turn that child back to them. And one of the moms that I'm working with, she's very wealthy. Her son was married and had a child. They got a divorce. He had custody of the child, and he passed away. He had a relapse one time, and he died. And the wealthy grandmother was making sure the child who was born addicted was getting all of her medications. One shot a month of a special hormone was $3,500. And the mother remarried, still an addict, went to court. The Harvard judge, even though the wealthy grandmother had all the appropriate witnesses and everything because she wanted to raise Brooke, gave the child back to the mother. And so she hadn't seen the child since she was 18 months old. She's now 6. And it was because of mommy bonding, and that your biological, well, sometimes your biological parent isn't the best thing for you. So there's a story out there that needs to be told, and that's what we're going to embark upon now. So I would encourage you guys to, I don't know if you're on Facebook or you think it's not so great, but it is really great for networking, for causes, and for putting contacts together and help me get the movie funded. So it's a great way to stay connected, especially to causes that you're passionate about. And the Behind the Orange Curtain has a page, and Natalie Costa has a page, and I'll surely friend you. And there's lots of posts. Some are funny, some are ridiculous, and some are about me ranting and raving about drugs and, you know, saving our children. So the kids at risk are between the ages of 10 and 15 in this country. So being quiet is not an option for me.
Thank you. I have a statement and a question. I want to know if this is happening here too. I have a friend, he's in Brisbane. He thought his son was sober. He was very proud that his son got into a training program for caregivers. Turned out his son was doing that so he could care for elderly people in their homes because they have cool drugs. Is this an avenue here too? Is that unusual?
No, it's not unusual at all. In fact, the people that do that are called cappers, and my office is in Leisure World. I'm the only acting school in Leisure World, but it used to be Laguna Woods, and they took us over. So, I mean, Laguna Hills. There are a lot of caregivers for the elderly that are in there stealing drugs. And most of the crime in Leisure World is because the elderly are being robbed on some level, and it's very abundant. You know, Medicare, there's 32 million people on Medicare. They get a lot of their prescriptions auto-shipped to them. So what happens to those drugs that are sitting there? If a pill is worth $40 on the street, you can bet that somebody who's got an issue or is greedy or is just thinking about it is going to take those drugs and you know, sell them on the street. So it's something you have to be very careful with your grandparents or people that are on medication, who's around you. And why we say lock up the meds may not be your child, but you have a friend over, you go in the bathroom. I've been guilty many times of looking in people's medicine cabinets, you know, and they're, yeah, it's not, I'm not something I'm proud of. But, you know, if there's medications in there, you know, they're free for the taking. You're not going to miss 5 or 10 pills out of a bottle. So get rid of them, lock them up, you know, just make sure that, you know, grandparents too. I know when my mother-in-law passed away, the hospice nurses came and collected all her medication. But there was morphine, there was all kinds of drugs that could have street value. So that's another thing you really need to be careful of as well.